John Clayton.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live at 710sports.com. On demand everywhere on the 710 Seattle Sports app. Now, John Clayton.
And we're pleased to be joined by Nate Burleson, co-host of Good Morning Football and also on CBS NFL Today. And so, Nate, first off, where are you at least working from home right now? Where's home?
Yeah, I'm in New Jersey right now. Been tucked away with the family. Luckily, the NFL Network, they outfitted my basement with basically a home camera system so I can do Good Morning Football from my basement every morning, which gives us the ability to try to have as much normalcy as we can during these strange times.
Yeah, and of course, I mean, it's not normal, that's for sure. I mean, with New Jersey being pretty well clamped down, do you get a chance to get out at all?
No, not much. Luckily I have a little bit of space in the backyard, so I kind of set up some cones and we work out with the kids. I have a 16-year-old, 14-year-old, and 10-year-old, so it's been fun just to hang out with the family.
Which, of course, that's a good thing to be able to do. And, of course, I mean, you don't have many other options, but that's a very good option. All right, so I know that you were listing some of the breakout wide receivers this year, and the one that you had breaking out as number one is on the Seahawks at DK Metcalf. Talk a little bit about him and what do you see happening with him?
I'm just a huge fan of DK. You know, dating back to college, and I'm not talking about the shirtless pitcher that everybody went crazy over, his actual gameplay. But there were so many questions surrounding his ability to take that size and that speed and transition into the league. You know, what I appreciated about DK coming in is that he's an extremely humble kid. Like, as gifted as he is, as blessed as he is, as hard as he has worked to get to this point, he just wants to learn and soak up knowledge. And I've been able to meet him on a couple of occasions. And every time it's like you're talking to this mammoth of a man, but he's like a teddy bear. And with that type of attitude and approach to your career, success is going to happen. It's going to come. And for me, the reason why I put him at the top of my list, you look at last year, tap dancing around 1,000 yards. And, of course, he did hit 1,000 once he was in the playoffs. But breaking that rookie record in that playoff game, his ability to run every route in the playbook, and still have so much more room for growth. It's scary. You know, people oftentimes see a young guy like that and they're like, man, that's pure talent right there. And it really is with hard work. Now, imagine 5 years from now, after spending off seasons working out, working with the trainers and conditioning coaches and weight room coaches that the NFL offers, he's going to be an exaggerated version of what we see now. He'll have softer hands, better eyes when it comes to tracking the ball. He'll be able to condense his size when running in the slot. I just feel like he's going to be a matchup problem for DBs for years to come.
Yeah, I mean, who would be the comparable for him of guys that you've seen?
I was thinking about that the other day, and the one guy that I could say is a comparable is David Boston. In pure size and intimidation. Now, David Boston, I mean, he had a couple of breakout seasons and then his body started to break down. But I remember seeing David Boston at the line of scrimmage and he looked so much bigger than the guys that were trying to guard him. And David Boston had moments, I just feel like because his body breaking down on him, he didn't have a chance to have the longevity. Now, you take that same type of size and speed and you give that to a younger version and a guy who is a little bit more knowledgeable about taking care of his body and wanting to have longevity, and not to mention you have one of the greatest quarterbacks of all time and Russell Wilson throwing you the ball. I just know that he's going to be as dominant as we've ever seen, you know, because usually you'll get the wide receiver who's tall and skinny and can run fast. You know, that's like the AJ Green. And then you'll get a physical freak like Julio Jones. Then after that, they tap dance around my height. It's like 6'6", 6'1". And those are the guys that can do everything. It's just like the guy that can do a lot of things very well. And then you have the smaller guys who are speedsters, you know, the Henry Ruggs and the Tyreek Hills. Those guys are the darts. Those are the Speedy Gonzalez / Roadrunner / Sonic the Hedgehog type wide receivers. You don't get a guy who's built like DK but also can run like Tyreek Hill. It just doesn't happen. And if you do, that guy is either too buff, too big to go track a ball and snatch it down, or he doesn't have hands. you see those guys all the time. It's like, you're that big, you probably should be playing defense because you can't catch the ball. DK Metcalf doesn't have that problem. He's only going to get better. So that's why I really like what I see out of him.
No question. Who are some of the other breakout wide receivers?
You know, I had CeeDee Lamb on that list. I believe I put Jerry Jeudy on that list. I do like Henry Ruggs as a Raider. And there's a bunch of guys that I wanted to put on the list, but they weren't necessarily breakouts. Like, I wanted to put Calvin Ridley on there, but Calvin Ridley has had 17 touchdowns over the first couple of seasons of his career. I don't think he's really going to be a breakout because we already know his name. I wanted to put A.J. Brown on that list because he had such a great year last season with the Titans. But, I mean, when you get over 1,000 yards, that's not necessarily a breakout either. I did put Will Fuller on that list because we've seen Will Fuller with the Texans make splash plays. I remember he had a streak of games. I believe it was four games, and he scored seven touchdowns because he was just a guy that could take the top off the coverage. And Deshaun Watson was dropping these beautiful balls. He was just catching them and running under them. Of course, you had DeAndre Hopkins attracting a lot of attention, so he was taking advantage of going against, you know, lesser-known names at the cornerback and safety position. But the reason I put him on my list is because now D-Hop is gone. I know they brought in Brandon Cooks, but this is your opportunity. Like, this is what the NFL is all about. You know, and it kind of reminds me of back in 2004, 2005, when I just came off a 1,000-yard season, and the Minnesota Vikings shocked everybody, shocked me for sure, when they traded Randy Moss to the Raiders. And my coach coming up to me is like, hey, listen, this is going to be big for you. You're going into your third year. You're coming off a great season. And, you know, just to be honest with you, we had faith in trading Randy Moss because we had you. And I'm just shaking my head, looking him in the eye, but inside I was saying to myself, that got to be the stupidest thing in the world. You traded Randy Moss because you got Nate Burleson left on the roster? So I was having this, like, internal conflict with myself. But, you know, history just repeats itself. We're living in the matrix of football. So if you look at the Houston Texans, a similar situation. I'm pretty sure that Will Fuller woke up one day and was like, wait, what? Hold up, wait. You serious? We traded away who? DeAndre Hopkins is now playing for the Arizona Cardinals? So there's a moment where it's like a punch in the gut because you don't have your road dog and a guy that can take away a lot of the pressure. But then in the same breath, you kind of got to look in the mirror like, all right, I'm no longer a Cub. I have to be a full-grown Lion this year.
Yeah, very interesting. So what do you see as far as the way offense is developing right now? Because we've got some interesting things. I mean, you know, you're seeing more of the college defenses coming in with the Joker safety that can play linebacker. You can see that you got all these changes coming in Philadelphia with them trying to put in more of the running packages that the Rams and 49ers are doing. You have the strange story in Green Bay with Matt LaFleur, you know, wanting to, you know, get more running in, kind of copying a little bit more of the Rams approach and the approach of what's going on in San Francisco. It's like, where do we see coming out of the offense this year?
You know, I remember my father once said to me that everything always comes back around. We were talking about clothing, and I was making fun of a picture that he had on, and it was like leather pants with like a bell-bottom boot cut, and he had this like kind of like messenger bag draped across his chest. And he's like, I guarantee you, you may think, you know, this your young little teenage mind that this is a weird look, but it's all going to come around. And sure enough, I've seen it all over the last 20 years. I've seen guys rocking the men purses, the merces. I even got one. I've seen all of the styles that were once popular in the 60s, 70s, 80s. All of it has came back around. The reason I responded with that first is because that's how NFL offenses are. Like, you can look at the 70s and 80s, and that was the time where if you ran the rock and you had a monster of a running back, like, you know, you wanted to have a Gale Sayers or Walter Payton, you know. And then the 90s came, and it was the fast guys that can do it all. It was Barry Sanders. Of course, Emmitt Smith was doing this thing. But then the late 90s, it was, you know, Marshall Faulk who came in, and then LT redefined what Roger Craig once did. So now teams were looking forward to having a running back that can catch out the backfield. And I think that's where the league is now. It's the creative offenses, just like you said. It's you know, being able to drop back and throw the ball to positionless players. You know, a guy like Tyreek Hill can run around the outside, inside. You can put him out of the backfield. And then one thing I do appreciate about the very creative teams, like Andy Reid, shout out to the Chiefs who just won the Super Bowl, the Rams, of course, they have this ability to identify the defense and simplify things for their quarterback. You see a lot of movement. And it almost reminds you of like the AFL or Canadian football, where guys are just moving pre-snap and they're flying around. But what that does in that split second where there's a shift, and then one guy pops on the line of scrimmage, another guy pops off, and another receiver, he motions from one side to the other. He might do a zigzag where he actually goes back to where he was just at. What that does, the quarterback, all he is doing is looking at the defense. He's looking at the guy over the person who's in motion to see if that person is going to run with him, because if he's running with him, most likely it's man. He's looking at the linebacker, seeing if that linebacker shifts, because is he going to stay and put, or are they running some type of zone? So I love that because it simplifies the game to make it faster, make it more entertaining for guys like me. And as a wide receiver, it's such a benefit. Now, with all that said, the game has become faster. And to your point, defenses have to adjust. You look at these defenses now who say, all right, do I get a big old-school linebacker that's built like Brian Urlacher and Ray Lewis, or do I get a guy who's a little bit smaller, a guy that can fly around a little bit easier, that can guard those running backs and wide receivers? Do I get a guy who's built more like Bobby Wagner, who can run just as fast as the running backs, and if he needs to guard a tight end down the slot, he can keep up with him because he has the hips to do so. They're starting to have more hybrid players on the other side of the ball. And what I love about us coming to this point in football 2020-2021 is that occasionally you'll have a team like the Titans who are just like, you know what, I get it. Every team is built to stop fast teams, and most of these teams are going to throw it 40 times a game, sometimes 50 times a game, like old run and gun style. But if you have a big back that reminds you, to bring it all full circle, of the running backs from the 60s, 70s, 80s, you're zagging while everybody else is zigging. And it catches teams off guard. Like Derrick Henry and Ryan Tannehill and the way that they ran that offense, I'm talking about hard nose. We're not even trying to trick you. We're just going to hand the ball off left, hand the ball off right, block the right guys, and we are going to punch you in the mouth until you can't take it anymore. And that's what they did. And, you know, it's a small window. When you have a back like Derrick Henry, it's like, hey, how long is this going to last? You know, a few seasons at the most, because we know the shelf life of running backs. And I feel like when it came to the Seahawks, that was one of the biggest reasons why they stumbled in the playoffs, is when you have, you know, Chris Carson and Rashad Penny go down, like they were starting to cook at the end of the season, and it gave a great balance to the pass game. So I'm really curious. I know that the Titans are going to be what they were last year, at least try to mimic that. I'm curious what other team is going to adopt that style, because I feel like when you're not part of the followers, the group of teams that want to do what everybody else is doing, oftentimes you find success in going the opposite direction.
Hey, Nate Burleson, great job. Watch him, of course, on Good Morning Football, and also when CBS NFL Today gets back on the air. Nate, thanks so much. Stay safe.
Of course, you too, man. Anytime.
Okay. And, of course, listen to the show via the 710 Sports app, powered by the Dubin Law Group. Coming up next, we get the report card.
It's time for the report card with the professor.
And a report card we get out of every day. We look at the good, the bad, the ugly, the smart, the stupid, what people say, what people do. We take the stories, the anecdotes. We take the social media comments. We take the voices, and we attach a grade to us. Curtis Rogers gives us the grade. And, of course, you know, we got plenty of stuff, I think, that's going to be interesting. So what do we have in a report card?
Well, yeah, John, let's start with the Josh Gordon news, or not really news, but he posted a photo of himself on Instagram working out in the Seattle area, and according to Pro Football Talk this morning, they expect Josh Gordon to apply for reinstatement to the NFL soon. He would be a free agent upon reinstatement, but a lot of signs point, you know, to the Seahawks having interest, and that interest would be mutual from Gordon. So, John, are we grading a return of Josh Gordon in 2020?
Oh, I think you give it a B+, maybe even an A. Again, you still have to see if he's going to be able to clear all the hurdles you would anticipate that he would. I think it's interesting. I'd like to see, has he spent the entire offseason here in Seattle? Has he planned this to be able to do it, or did he just kind of fly in and start to work out? So I think that it's a good thing, and I think that getting him back would be a definite B+, if not an A.
Yeah, I'll give it a B as well. I think because of the league's new rules, there is less stiff punishment for, you know, testing positive for marijuana, which I think has been at the root of Gordon's at least substance abuse or substance under the league substance abuse policy, you know, for the majority of his suspensions. Obviously, he had the PED one last year, too, in addition to the substance suspension. But, you know, we're all rooting for him to you know, get clean and to be able to put together a full 16 games in a row, which he's never done in his career. But hopefully he'll be able to do that in 2020. He's only 29 years old, too, mm-hmm, John, mm-hmm, which is wild to think about because he's been, you know, playing since, like, what, 2012 in the NFL? Yeah, hopefully he can get it straight here in the 2020 season and be a contributor. Hopefully it's with the Seahawks, too. John, also on the report card today, we know tensions are a little high between the MLB owners and front offices and the players right now as they are trying to hammer out some details, financial details on how they're going to restart this season. The players, they don't want to budge on the 50-50 revenue split. They also don't want to budge on anything less than a prorated salary for 82 games in the season. Well, Mariners GM Jerry DePoto, he joined Paul Gallant and Michael Bumpus this morning, as he does every single Thursday on Danny and Gallant. And he got, you know, pretty direct towards the players here in this comment, just saying, hey, man, suck it up. Let's go play.
My general thought is, you know, just go play. At the end of the day, we're very fortunate to do what we do, and, you know, whatever our job is in professional sports, and in this moment in time, and I guess in any moment, my urge is, like, as we develop culture and as we develop character with our club, you know, we understand that there's a big world around you and there are a lot of people suffering. Don't whine, just go play.
Don't whine, just go play, John. How are we grading Jerry DePoto? Kind of saying, hey, this is where we're at, and we don't want any here any sort of complaints considering, you know, the situation that we're in this country.
We wouldn't give it a B-, because again, it's like, say what you want, but the players are risking themselves by trying to do this, and, you know, I think that you don't want to make it a money grab, and you can understand that they don't want to set precedent and have some kind of a salary cap. I mean, a 50-50 split of revenues would be not a salary cap, but it would be, you know, something that could be turned into a salary cap. And so, you know, there's got to be a compromise, but the players have to come up with something different, something they can compromise with, because you can see from the owner's standpoint, you're not going to give half salary total. So, you know, with all the losses that they're going to have, what, $4 billion in losses. So something has to be worked up, but, you know, the owners have their proposal. They got to be a little bit flexible.
Yeah, I would hope that both sides are able to come to an agreement and it doesn't play out publicly the way the 1994 strike did, where, you know, you've got players who are making millions of dollars and them saying, you know what, this millions that we're already making, it's not good enough. You know, it doesn't send the right message, but at the same time, you know, you can understand why the players don't want to take anything less, because they're going to be more at risk than the front office people, because the front office people, they can still do their job from home. Whereas the players, they have to be playing. They have to be, you know, in groups of 25 people at the least, plus, you know, another 25 of the team you're playing against. So it's such an unfortunate thing right now that it's just boiling down to how do we divvy up this money. But it seems inevitable that that's what it's going to come down to in terms of how this season may or may not get played. But, John, let's end this one on a good note. Let's end this report card on a good note. Former Mariner, current Minnesota Twin, just all-around good guy, Nelson Cruz, who is still very active in the Seattle community when it comes to charity work and fundraising. He has been nominated for ESPN's Muhammad Ali Award for his charity work. He's going up against other people in the category. Maya Moore of the WNBA, Kevin Love of the NBA's Cleveland Cavaliers, the McCourty twins in the NFL, and then Titus O'Neil of WWE. So, John, just a tremendous honor for Nelson Cruz. All finalists will receive a $25,000 grant from ESPN to direct to their charities. And the eventual winner will get $100,000 towards their charity. So, John, how are we grading the tremendous charity work that Nelson Cruz has done throughout his career?
Got to be an A+, because that's the one thing about Nelson. And, of course, I think the thing that, you know, I miss, and I think most of the fans miss, is that just how much he seemed to love the game, you know, the way he interacted with everybody. I mean, he was such such a positive guy, and you can see he was having so much fun with this game. So I think that's a great thing. So I would definitely give it an A plus.
Yeah, absolutely an A plus. I've never met a single person that had a bad word to say about Nelson Cruz. He is one of the good guys in sports, one of the great guys in Seattle sports history. And he was only here for a short time. He's only here for 4 seasons, but he definitely left his mark. So shout out to him. Hopefully he's able to pull out a victory here and spread even more good cheer around.
That would be great stuff. And so good job on the report card. And, of course, be sure to check out the professor's notes on 710sports.com. The professor's notes are brought to you by Infinity of Tacoma at 5. Coming up next, we're going to go on the Visi Hard Seltzer text line and take your text questions. It's the John Clayton Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to The Professor, John Clayton.
Live from the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming through the 710 Sports app and on 710sports.com.
It is time to go on the Visi Hard Seltzer text line at 710-710 and check out your questions. Curtis, what do we have?
John, from the 206, they want to know, how would a signing of Devontae Freeman or Carlos Hyde impact a potential return of Marshawn Lynch?
I think it would end it. I think that you're not going to add, two backs. I think that because, again, he's only going to be, a specialty type of back, a short yardage guy. It would be a guy that would go on the goal line. And so I think that would probably end the chance for Marshawn to come here. If they're going to sign a running back who's a veteran, it's going to be one and one only.
From the 360, they want to know, do you think Alden Smith will have to serve a suspension after his reinstatement?
No, he's already served it. I mean, he's been cleared. He's 100% eligible to be able to do anything. Now, on the next one, if he would have a positive test or something like that, he's going to be under the old rules because, again, he's not going to be under the new rules. But, I think that at this stage, he's clear to play.
From the 425, they want to know, do any teams have interest in trading for Josh Rosen?
In fact, the story surfaced in the last 24 hours that Miami is getting some trade calls. I can't imagine there being a lot because I think the quarterback position at the backup is pretty well taken, but they are getting some calls.
Another 425 number wants to know, who will have the most receiving yards for the Tampa Bay Bucks this season?
Mike Evans. You can maybe make the argument it's going to be Chris Godwin. It's not going to be Rob Gronkowski. But again, you've got the best 1-2 duo at wide receiver. But Mike Evans is an absolute stud. Godwin's good, too.
Yeah, I feel like Evans is probably, talent-wise, probably the second-best wide receiver Tom Brady's ever played with behind Randy Moss. I mean, he is really, really good, really underrated because, before Tom Brady showed up, Bucks games no one cared about. Now we're going to know all about these guys.
Well, let's put it this way. As much as Brady was starved for talent last year, he's not starved this year. He's got plenty of good stuff.
Yeah, he's got it in spades in Tampa Bay. From the 253, John, they want to know, if Josh Gordon does sign with the Seahawks, would it be for the veteran minimum?
Maybe. They might be a little bit more flexible because, last year he played a little bit over $2 million as a restricted free agent. Again, they didn't have to pay the whole thing because he was in New England for, much of the first half of the season. I think what they ended up paying about $1 million. But I would think it's more than likely that it would be the minimum salary. Because, again, it's like, you got Philip Dorsett who signed for the minimum. I think he just wants the chance to be able to play.
509, John, they bring up yesterday Colin Cowherd appeared on Tom, Jake, and Stacy. If you missed that, you can check it out on the podcast page. They want to know, John, they say, Colin Cowherd has said the Seahawks have never protected Russell Wilson. So how do you feel about that statement? How do you feel about the current offensive line?
I think the offensive line is going to be a little bit better because it's a little bit younger. I think it's, again, the one problem is going to be trying to get, three new starters, I think, trying to adjust to that with limited amount of time with no offseason program and that. But, again, that's just what you have to do. But I think the line is going to be a little bit better. Say what you want about Jermaine Ifedi. He was available, but he made a lot of mental mistakes. Mental mistakes in the sake of the penalties. Not that he didn't execute the play. He struggled on pass situations. as much as you like DJ Fluker, and I did because I thought he brought such an attitude, I think they can replace that with Damian Lewis. And the one thing I was always concerned about was the theory of 150 when you would start to add up the ages of the offensive linemen, and if the five starters total 150 and you're getting close to that. So no, I think this line's going to be better. I think BJ Finney may not be as good as Justin Britt, but I think he can offer some things at the center position.
From the 253, interesting question here. They go, which college football star were you most surprised was a bust in the NFL?
I mean, maybe you can look at Ryan Leaf, if you want to call him a bust. I think the one that kind of amazed me more, because I still remember flying down to Oakland and watching his rookie camp practice, Jamarcus Russell. Because, I mean, I was watching him, and I hadn't seen throwing like that since, you know, watching daily practices with the Steelers of Terry Bradshaw. And so I think that, you know, and of course, I mean, he had all kind of problems off the field, on the field, you name it. So I think Jamarcus Russell might be the one I would put up there.
Mine, I wouldn't consider him a bust because he had a long NFL career and it was productive, but it was nowhere near the level of production that it was in college. Reggie Bush, he was dynamic with the Saints in spurts, but he was not the game-breaking running back that he was at USC. So I was surprised he never became what he was at USC. He was unbelievable in college. Probably the best running back I've ever seen in college.
And of course, I'm spoiled. I watch Tony Dorsett, so.
It's true. You had him right there in Pittsburgh. So, John from the 206, they want to know, why hasn't Larry Warford been signed yet?
Probably asking a little bit too much money, and you know, it's like, you know, it wasn't like it was a great guard draft, but it was a deep guard draft, and so you know, you figure that the two teams that are talking, you know, may have some cap issue. I know Chicago's interested, and then I think Houston's interested, but you know, it's a matter sometimes. It's like you got to get your price down to get it done.
From the 425, they want to know, would any receivers on Seattle's roster have to be released to make room for Josh Gordon if he's reinstated?
Not really. I mean, because again, they got the 90-man roster. They just have to pick and choose. I mean, you notice that when they got the Geno Smith deal done, you know, they actually cut a tight end because all the tight ends, they had nine. And so Justin Johnson ended up getting cut. So it's going to be more of the back of the end guy making $610,000 that is deeper down the depth chart.
From the 509, interesting question here because we don't know how the rest of his career is going to play out, but they want to know, could Tyler Lockett one day become the best Seahawks wide receiver of all time, or maybe in the top three? Because Steve Largent, that's going to be very tough.
Yeah,
to pass.
Let's put it this way. As good as Lockett is, I mean, and you can make the argument that maybe, you know, Doug Baldwin would be number two. You know, I think that maybe as time goes on, maybe he can challenge Baldwin, but he's not going to catch up to Largent. I mean, let's put it this way. Would you say that, you know, you see a Hall of Fame career in Tyler Lockett? And the answer is no. We had a Hall of Fame career watching it with Steve Largent.
Yeah, Steve Largent retired as the NFL's all-time leading receiver. So
right.
That is a lofty expectation to have. I mean, Tyler Lockett's great, and I think he, you know, once his Seahawks career is over, he's definitely in the top five. Could be very well in the top three by the end of it. But it's going to be a long way to go to pass Steve Largent on any sort of all-time list. From the 253, they want to know, do you think Carson and Penny, if they stay healthy, can surpass 1,500 yards combined?
Very possible. I mean, it depends on when Penny comes back, but you know that Chris Carson has now had 2,000-yard seasons, and I think that, you know, he can get, if he's healthy, 1,100 yards, and that would put Penny in a position in 10 games to get, 400 yards. That would be 40. Of course, you know, if they sign Freeman, that may take away some carries, and, you know, with the young guys from the University of Miami, that may take away some carries, but, I think it's very possible.
And finally, John, let's wrap with this one. From the 206, they want to know, could the NBA consider expansion in order to make up the lost revenue that they're going to lose over the next couple of years? And could Seattle be in that running?
That's an interesting one. But see, the problem with doing that is that they still have the big TV contract, and that means that you'd have to share. Now, if you find a way to, they don't get the early portions of that, maybe that could be the case. I'd say right now, no. But again, at some point, they're going to do it. I just don't think this pandemic is going to, and the lost revenue from the pandemic is going to, you know, create an opportunity to expand. I just don't see it.
That is it for today's text questions.
All right, so coming up next, we got our Daily Dose of the Groz with Dave Grosby.
You're listening to The Professor, John Clayton.
Live from the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming through the 710 Sports app and on 710sports.com.
And joining us with our Daily Dose of the Groz is Dave Grosby. And so, Dave, what is going on with Chris Sims? I mean, it's like all of a sudden he keeps on putting out stuff that, doesn't seem to be true. So today he says that Dak Prescott turned down 5 years, $175 million contract from the Dallas Cowboys. And now from the team side and Dak Prescott's side, you know, he says it's definitely not true. So both sides denied it. And, of course, you know, he's still on this campaign that the Seahawks were, you know, talking trade with Cleveland for Russell Wilson, and that they were going to, if they didn't get that trade, they were going to draft Josh Allen. What's going on with Chris Sims?
You tell me, John, why are we even talking about a guy who's so out in the wind? I mean, he's just trying to get people to talk about him, and he's succeeding, I suppose, because starting with the Russell Wilson thing, that was just ridiculous, I thought. And I don't care that, you know, who was it substantiated, or was it Tim Hasselbeck who said, yeah, he'd heard the same thing? I mean, it was Danny O'Neill did a great job of just lacerating that entire realm of thinking. And, yeah, I can't tell you what he's thinking, man. I guess it shouldn't look good, and people should stop quoting the guy if both sides in a story deny it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, it's like, you got to be kidding.
Yeah, I mean, it beats the heck out of me. He's lost his marbles, I suppose.
Yeah,
trying to stay sane like everyone else. He's just spewing out there whatever he can and hoping people will take it.
But you think it's a matter that he's trying to draw more attention to himself at a time right now where there's so little live sports?
100%. 100%. I mean, what else is there to do but just, fire out crazy rumors and see what sticks? I think for everyone in the sports world, it's their crazy time for sure. I said it last week in a little audio thing, but I'm amazed how you guys are able to get shows done every single day with absolutely nothing going on.
Mm-hmm. Well, I guess the good part is for this area and, of course, this show and all the other shows is it's so much football talk because, you know, it's supposed to be, you know, it is a quiet week, usually around Memorial weekend. You know, things are, you know, either wrapping up a little bit because you're still in the middle of your OTAs, but, you know, you get the long weekend off and, you know, here it is yesterday. And you knew that they were talking running back with Devontae Freeman, you know, Carlos Hyde, and also Marshawn Lynch. But then, you know, Mike Silver came out and said that the offer was 1 year, $3 million with a chance to go to $4 million for Freeman. And so that got a lot of conversation going.
Yeah, and that was kind of an interesting story because he turned it down and is looking to get more money than that. And we know how the league normally feels about running backs, John. I'm not so sure he's going to get more than that. Are you?
I don't think so, no, because, again, being that I track this so much, as each week goes by, the numbers keep going down. You know, like, for example, the guy who replaced him, Todd Gurley, ended up getting 1 year, $5.5 million, and that was in, you know, toward the beginning of free agency. And so then after he was released on a June 1st cut, and so then you saw the market coming down even more. I mean, here's, you know, Melvin Gordon going to Denver. You know, he turned down $10 million last year. He gets 2 years, 16 from the Denver Broncos, but that ship passed. And, you know, every other running, Frank Gore signed for the minimum, you know, Chris Thomas. Thompson, who, you know, was in Washington with Jay Gruden when he was the head coach, went down to Jacksonville. He got 1 year, 1.4. And so the market's 2 to 3 million right now. And you see very few players even getting over the minimum.
Yeah, it's interesting. I'm not sure if it's the uncertainty of the times or just guys doing what guys tend to do, and that's misjudge their market value.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, it's
probably a little bit of both.
No, we certainly saw that to a major degree with Jadeveon Clowney, because now I think that his market may have dropped to $10
million. And it's not, I mean, and you wonder why he keeps waiting if it keeps going down.
Well, and then the thing is so strange, it's almost as if he doesn't want to counter. It's like, okay, here's Seattle. They'll start at 13 or 14 million and say, okay, how about that? No. Not going to counter. All right. What about we take it to 15? Nope, not going to counter. Take it to 16. Not going to counter. You know, and then, you know, he missed all the chances to get to 17 or 18 million because he was asking early for 22 to 23. I mean, it's just bizarre.
Tells me that he's probably taking his own advice and probably not listening to his agent enough, who mm-hmm. can't be advising this strategy when his market value is going down on seems like a weekly basis.
Oh, yeah, no question about it. And, of course, I mean, do a counter. But, I think this is more on the player because the agent's Bus Cook. You know, Bus was Brett Favre's agent, and he's a very good, thorough agent. And so I can't imagine, you know, you're not going to have him not counter.
Well, no, he understands the deal, right? I mean, as much as anything else, he understands the deal. He understands what's going on. Any veteran agent would, if it was a guy who had never done it before, or a baseball agent, as you like to call Russell Wilson's guy, then that's maybe a different story. But you got an experienced guy in this case.
Yeah. What are you starting to get worried about the Players Association and the owners as far as getting a deal together to get things started for baseball? Because it seems like the owners are going to get another proposal next week, but they may stay with the 50-50, which you know the players aren't going to go for. But the players basically want, you know, the 82 games that they're going to play at full pay.
Yeah, and I'm hoping someone provides the middle ground on this, which is there, which is just to, you know, not do the 50-50, but say, all right, we won't prorate for 82 games because of, you know, the lack of concessions and things like that. We'll make it for 70 games or something like that. I mean, there's a deal to be made, John. That's how I put it. So I don't know if I'm getting worried about it. It just, you know, it depends on how long either side wants to play chicken on this thing. There's still time to get everything. And that's kind of the thing. Keep in the back of your mind that a likely timetable, if everyone would have their wish, would be for it to start on the 4th of July, which is still a ways away. I mean, it's 6 weeks away. You need 3 weeks at least to prepare. So you've still got a window. You've still got some time. But I wouldn't put it past them. But there's room to maneuver here, and there's still time to do it. So, you know, it's there's not the daily pressure that we tend to think because there's not much else to talk about. But I remain hopeful that they get it figured out.
Yeah, and Jeff Passan, I think, said it pretty well in the last day where he said that he thinks, not that it's a deadline, but the key date is June 1st. And so we're only, 10 days away from that. And why he said June 1st is that you have to then start to get everybody together as far as spring training and all that stuff, or summer training or whatever you want to call it. And then if you want to start by July, and I think each week after that pushes everything back and probably cuts down the number of games.
Maybe. I mean, it's probably, I would say the first week of June. Like I said, I think you could do a 3 week spring training and be ready to roll in a circumstance like this with a shortened season. So I don't disagree. I think they've got 2 to 3 weeks to get something resolved, which is plenty of time.
Yeah, and of course they need that time to get everything ready for the season. Thoughts on the NBA now, because looks like they're starting to gain the momentum to have everything down in Orlando, and they're going to now start to open more things up for the players to be able to get in the facility. So it looks like that very well can salvage something.
Curious to see if it does happen, and you know they're really just up to the playoffs at this point, but I still haven't heard a loud approval from the Players Association there. You've heard most players getting ready to go back, but a lot haven't yet. So that still feels like a wait and see to me as well, John.
Yeah, no, I think you're right about that. And, time is starting to run out. But, of course, I mean, it's still optimistic now that, if they can get the deals done for the lost revenue in all these sports, then everything goes. And it still seems that the NFL is operating under the idea that they're going to be able to have a 16-game season and maybe start it at the right time, at the regular time.
Well, and I think everyone got a boost by the fact that NASCAR had a very successful debut. And, you know, we talked about other leagues in other countries, but it's important to have it happening in this country, and it did happen successfully this weekend. So that goes a long way, too, I think.
That's our Daily Dose of the Groz with Dave Grosby. Dave, stay safe and stay home.
Talk to you tomorrow, John.
All righty. And, of course, our thanks to CenturyLink for, getting the ISDN line back, particularly to Pete, who spent so much time on this, to Vern at the station, to Paul at the station, to everybody. It's been quite an ordeal, but we got it fixed, and we're back working from the ISDN. Thanks so much. It's the John Clayton Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.